my basic thesis was to contest the assumption that seems to underlie the conference that we live in a world of pluralism. And much of my paper was spent exploring and disputing the idea that we live in a world of profound diversity and difference, and arguing that what we see across, especially the developed world today, is an increasing homogenization and standardization that we see in the marketplace, we see in our major institutions, our universities, our schools, and that this reflects a deeper kind of sameness that's overlaid with a kind of patina of difference.
Yes, and you explained that even in terms of the consumerist tendency that we see, that we think there's a great variety of choice to buy things, and yet actually it's concentrated in the ownership of a few. The same with programs in the States you referred to, but diversity and inclusion that students are put through.
Right. One of the things, having taught now for about 25 years, is the striking sameness of my students. We like to proclaim how diverse and different and distinctive our students are, and we especially show that through differences or different origins of geographic origins and differences of races and ethnicities, sexual orientation. But when we scratch the surface of those forms of identity, what we find is a student who is above all devoted to a kind of sameness, same set of worldviews that are lightly held, that express a kind of indifferentism toward deeply held belief, that one succeeds especially by having lightly held views that allows for one to function and work in nearly any setting without having to take on a deeply held set of commitments.
Do you think that what's happening is that there is a superficiality in terms of, you know, the general proposition that we should tolerate and accept difference and diversity, that somehow I think you're saying that, however, is precluding genuine talk of genuine difference, and the challenge then to accept that deep differences do exist and that are not all equal?
Right. Well, one of the things that I mentioned in my talk was that the word toleration literally comes from the word where we talk about tolerances of stress tolerances, for example, when we talk about materials, metals, and the like. That toleration was not understood as in some ways a kind of indifference toward the views or beliefs of another, but a kind of deep encounter with the other, a profound and deep encounter with an other that can be really quite different. And I think what I see among my students, and I think what we see as one of the outcomes of an increasingly liberal society, is a kind of preliminary indifference that ends up being a kind of sameness rather than a kind of encounter with difference and otherness. And I concluded my paper by arguing that in today's world, the church actually presents a true vision of otherness, a true kind of otherness, in a world in which you see an increasingly flattened, kind of homogenized existence.
Yeah, because before we look at what you said about the church and the contribution that, and maybe perhaps the way you would prefer to rephrase the question about the role of church in a pluralist society, you mentioned an interesting report, the Pew report, and comparing the generation from 1945 up to 1960, then the baby boom generation, then Generation X, and then the millennial generation, which is up to 2014. And the survey showed some very remarkable results about how people, the millennials, view themselves vis-a-vis, say, the previous generations, and it's been an increasingly dramatic change.
Right. No, this is an amazing set of findings, and this is where sometimes social science can be very helpful in correcting our theories. Again, the premise of this conference, and it's not an untoward premise, is that we live in a world of plurality and difference. And what the empirical data shows, especially if you look at this generationally, is a really kind of unidirectional trajectory in which people have become more individuated, that is to say, less connected to each other, they become less trustful of each other, they become less willing to marry, that is to say, take on long-term commitments, less willing to form families together, that they are less patriotic, less likely to identify with their place, their homeland, and that all these trends go in one direction and become very visible as it moves through generations. It's not as if there's a randomness in these measures. There's a very uniform trajectory in these measures that shows that as advanced liberalism has moved forward, people have become increasingly disconnected, individualized, autonomous, which is to say more likely to, in some ways, be people alone.
and less likely to commit as well, an issue with commitment.
Right. What's striking, again, especially among the millennial generation, is the very low percentage who are likely to marry, as well as to show distrust toward others. And and one of the basic features of a civilization is the capacity of people not merely to tolerate in that sense of indifference one another, but to form a kind of deep commitment and care for one another and for the world in which they live. And I would say those measures show us to be in something of a crisis.
So you take that analysis and the backup from social science, and you then say that that has implications for the question, not that it should be the role that the church plays in a pluralist society, but something very different.
Well, I suggested that if we speak in the language of a role of the church, then we're in some ways accepting the notion that we live in a highly pluralistic society in which the church can fit itself into that plurality and play a role in that plurality. And my suggestion is that if my argument is correct, then we should see that the church plays so much not a role as it presents an alternative, as it really presents an alternative understanding of human relationality, of the capacity or possibility of commitment, of care, of love of other, of a commitment that takes place over time, that connects the past to the present and to the future, and doesn't exist in a kind of profound presentism, and rejects the indifferentism that I think is so pervasive in our age.
You also say it provides a variety, which is a genuine variety, as opposed to the variety of choice that appears to be a variety in liberalism, but in actual fact is moving more and more towards a monolith.
Right. Again, the dominant narrative suggests that we live in an age of profound, exploding plurality and diversity as compared to a preceding time of uniformity. But if you look at the contributions of the church in its history, in its culture, in its festivals, in its many forms of worship, in the ways, in the variety of the saints and the worship of the saints, one can just visit the crypt at the Catholic University Basilica in Washington, D.C., and see dozens of kinds of Mary in all the various chapels, all the ways in which Mary has been understood in different cultures. What you see is a remarkable explosion of cultural diversity. This was not a monolithic, singular, univocal form of belief. So it seems to me that there's in some ways a kind of background structure that either produces a kind of monolithic self that seems to be the case in liberal orders, or allows for the capacity of extraordinary explosion of real diversity, of real cultural variety, that requires a kind of initial background commitment of a certain kind of human destiny. And it just seems to me that if we scrape off the theory and we look at the facts, we actually see the narrative is rather different.
But maybe also the church itself has contributed to a demise of its own authority. I'm thinking of the child sexual abuse scandals. I'm thinking about its ability to not adapt to some of the better points of a liberal society, the role of women, the inclusivity in that regard, to use the hackneyed terms. But nonetheless, there are civil rights that people have accrued that are good rights, and that our church would not have given them had they been left to their own devices.
Right. Now, there's no doubt that part of this next chapter of confrontation with modernity is not simply to wholesale reject many of the real accomplishments of a liberal society, a society of opportunity and mobility and the capacity of people to live lives outside of authoritative orders or authoritarian orders. And I think, you know, there's a widespread consensus today that the church's effort, especially to align itself closely to the state, something I think is truer in Europe certainly than in the United States, was a very unfortunate and lamentable part of the church's history. And in no way am I suggesting that this renewal of the church would in any way align itself with the powers of the state. I think that that project or experiment has been shown to be deeply problematic, but that the church needs in some ways to create an alternative as a kind of cultural force, as a force in the lives of people that otherwise, it seems to me, are increasingly hollowed out by a consumerist, materialist culture. And in that sense, I think that the church can, while not eschewing the accomplishments of liberalism, nevertheless provide a kind of richer alternative to the hollowed out and in many ways emaciated understanding of the human person that we see on display today.